What's up, everybody? It's Lee. You guys might know me as Intuition, and you're listening to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in again. I appreciate it, as always. Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, or if you don't use iTunes, subscribe to us on Stitcher. We're on both of those. I had somebody tell me, like, oh, yeah, I didn't know that you guys put out an interview every week because I've just been going by the YouTube videos. But yes, every single Wednesday, we are going to put out a podcast. So make sure that you subscribe on iTunes. You can listen to it on your phone while you're driving in the car. Very relaxing because I have a very soothing voice. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, at I Am Database. We're both the same on Instagram, straight slanging them filters. You can follow us as a unit on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat, youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat for all the videos that we've been doing. They've been going great. Very happy about that. And of course, you can find everything wrapped into one pretty package on kindaneat.net. Today we have on a dude that I've known for quite a while. His name is Brick Stowell, and he's a real cool dude. He is the kind of tour manager amongst many other things. He manages the whole touring department of Odd Future. He's been working with them for a while, got in early, right as they were like really fucking blowing up and hitting critical mass. It's a really cool story about his hustle coming down here at the age of 17, getting involved with like working with the Living Legends, working with MERS, and then just kind of like hard work paid off, and now he has a great job working with Odd Future. And so that's kind of the theme of this whole episode, is like working hard, and the harder you work, the better things will happen to you. And so with that, I have a question from a dude named William who asks, if someone were looking to approach an indie label looking to get signed, what should they bring to the table? Should it be an already successful career sans label, a fully demoed release, looking to get that release put out by the label, and maybe a future contract? Or is there some other entirely separate angle that works better? Well, William, I appreciate the question. And I think that it's a tough question to answer. I don't know the answer because I'm not signed to a label. But we can sit here and brainstorm together. Here's the thing about getting signed to an indie label. In this day and age, there's not really a need. You can do everything by yourself fairly inexpensively and probably with a lot less red tape. And also like with just a lot fewer hoops to jump through. And it's just very efficient to do it on your own. When I was a young kid, when I was younger, I was in college. I had a marketing class where we had to like, I went to photo school, mind you, but we had a marketing class where we had to like call and interview a business person that we looked up to. I was already trying to make music. And at the time I called up Jay Bird, who is a big player in Rhymesayers. I don't know his exact title, but I just wanted to talk to him because I knew he was like kind of a shot caller at Rhymesayers and I loved Rhymesayers. So I called him and interviewed him and blah, 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 blah. And the one thing that really stuck with me, I asked him the same question. I said, how does somebody get signed to a label like Rhymesayers? And he said, you know, we're not really looking to like sign anybody that's not the homie unless they've got like, you know, $1 million spit, meaning they're not really fucking with the, like, it's on some no new friend shit. You know what I mean? Like, labels aren't really looking to sign people unless like they know they're going to be giant buzzworthy artists, or unless it's like the homie. You know what I mean? So I don't understand in this day and age the point in reaching out to independent labels personally. If it's the route that you want, I can tell you that, yeah, your best bet is to be a successful artist already, because labels want to fuck with people that are going to make them money. You know what I mean? Like, that's the whole point of a record label, is that they put out your music and then they get a big percentage of it, and in turn they help you with other things, whether it be getting booking agents and getting, you know, hooking up tours with other artists that are bigger than you, paying for the physical copies, distributing your stuff digitally. But the thing about digital distribution is you can do it yourself on sites like TuneCore or CD Baby for very cheap, and then no one takes any money out of your pocket, because if you sign a digital distribution deal, iTunes is taking money out of your pocket first, and then your digital distributor takes a little more of a cut. And oftentimes these contracts that you sign, you don't realize that they're in perpetuity, which means that they're forever. If you don't have management and a lawyer looking at the contract, you could be stuck in a contract where people are taking a percentage of your record forever, and there's really nothing you can do about it, you know? So what I would say, William, is like, your best bet is hard work. If you want people to notice you, you don't need an independent label. All you need is whatever the music you have is and the internet. If you're working hard and you're making good music, people are going to notice you. And if people are noticing you, you'll be able to make the same money that you could on an independent record label by yourself. And I think that's kind of the theme of this whole podcast, like I just said, is that working hard, you have to do it yourself. I don't know what kind of independent record label you're asking me about per se, like if you have one in mind, but chances are if like people aren't already fucking with you, they're not fucking with you either. If you're working hard and people are coming to you and you all of a sudden get a good Twitter following, you got some YouTube videos that are cracking, people are coming to your shows, those things get noticed and then people will reach out to you. I think it's very rare nowadays. You hear stories about it sometimes, but it's very rare nowadays for someone to just send a demo into a record label and get noticed and get a call back. Like the days of that happening just don't exist anymore because of the internet. You know what I mean? The whole thing is like if a group like The Weeknd can fucking put out one song from a mysterious tweet and Drake retweets it and all of a sudden they're like the biggest R&B group in the world a few years ago. It's like labels will probably fiending over them and just salivating over that. But the point is that they brought that attention upon themselves. And so you need to bring attention upon yourself and then people will reach out to you. And honestly, you know, in this day and age, this is my personal opinion and I hope that no one gets offended by it, but I just don't see the point in being on an independent record label unless it's a big independent record label. And at this point, the big independent record labels are essentially, a lot of them have distribution deals with majors, you know what I mean? So like they work hand in hand with majors. So it's like, if you want a record deal, shoot for the fucking stars, man. Think bigger than an independent record label. Like get on a major, you know what I'm saying? Like, dudes like Macklemore, groups like Odd Future, who we talk about in a lot in this podcast, like they're able to operate on the playing field of major labels while still putting out music that is aesthetically underground. You know what I mean? Macklemore is an underground rapper. Tyler is an underground rapper. Those guys are hugely successful. And so the point is like the underground aesthetic, the independent aesthetic is a popular one right now. So fuck it. Like, don't shoot for an independent label. Like, go get this money. Let's fucking be on majors. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what it's all about, man. So yeah, I don't know. Hopefully that helps. But my point is like, if you're just starting out and you're already thinking about looking for labels, which is a natural fucking thing to do. It's natural to get ahead of yourself and think like, oh, okay, so now I've got this music. Now I need to get on a label to like get famous. Like, it makes sense theoretically in your head. But the truth is you're getting ahead of yourself. Put it out on your own, get your friends to like it, get their, you know, friends of friends, get their, your friends' cousins to start talking about you, have a following, and then worry about being on a label. I think you only need to be on a label when the shit gets too big for you to control it yourself. You know what I mean? So hopefully that helps, William. I wish you all the best. Good luck in your music making endeavors. And without further ado, let's get into the conversation with my man, Brick Stowell. What's up, dude?
What Hi. Up, bro? How
yeah,
we doing?
Brick. Good to see you. I haven't seen you in forever.
It's been a minute, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
usually only see you now at like night events.
Yeah, when we're really out here.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. But yeah, I've known you for a while. Like I met
Long
you,
time now.
Like 07, I think I met you when you were a lowly merch man. You were peddling merch.
Exactly, yeah. But that's how, you know.
Yeah.
That's how you start.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you don't want to be a rapper.
Yeah. Did you ever want to be a rapper?
I still probably always want to be a rapper down to heart, but I know that that's not the right thing to do.
Do you rap?
No, I can't. I'm not good at it. I couldn't do it.
You get drunk and freestyle?
No, I'm not that guy. I'm definitely, you know what? I pride myself. I remember like, say working with the legends, they would always talk about like, oh yeah, I remember that fool used to be a merch guy.
Yeah.
And so like from early times, I was like, I never want to be the guy who works for rappers and then turns into a rapper,
right,
if that
right.
makes sense.
Yeah, because then your past will never leave you.
Yeah, exactly.
The OGs, quote unquote, will always be like, oh, pff, you're the merch guy. You're not a real
I
rapper.
I mean, yeah. without me naming people, yeah.
Lo and behold, you are featured on my next album as a... No, I'm just kidding. first things first, where are you from? Are you from California?
Yes, I'm from California. I grew up in a place halfway across the Golden Gate Bridge called Marin County.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up there until I was like 17, and then I moved to LA as soon as I graduated high school.
What's Marin all about?
Marin is a...
Is that where Alex is from, too?
Yeah, Alexander Spit yeah. is from Marin as well.
We talked about you. You've come up on the podcast a few times, which is why I've wanted to bring you in to talk.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. I hope good things.
Yeah. Well, some. No, they were good things.
No. Some people don't like... You know, whatever.
Most people don't like me, so it's fine.
Yeah, it is what it is, man, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But, no, I'm from Marin, and I moved to LA... when I was 17. Oh, you're asking me what Marin's all about.
Yeah,
Marin is like a wealthy suburb, mainly white people. There's two areas that are really, it's really not funny, but it's kind of crazy that these places still exist like that. But in a, like a rich, yuppie, hippie area right across the Golden Gate Bridge is Marin County. And then there's like two segregated areas. There's the canal and Marin City. Uh-huh. And the canal is where all the Hispanic people live. Mm. And Marin City is where all the black people live.
Mm.
And then in between and then past them.
So it's like you can literally be on the wrong side of the tracks there.
Total, like legit. Like once you're in Marin City, it's, you know, it's all black people. Marin City is where supposedly Tupac lived for a while when he went to Tamalpais High School.
Okay.
And so like, it's like kind of like never been let down that that's where Tupac's from. And then like I said, it's, you know, all black people there and then a bunch of white people in between. And then, the canal, which is, like I said, where all the Hispanic people live. And it's Marin is a beautiful, like scenic wise, it's crazy.
Gorgeous.
It's it's beautiful, dude. It's
did
like,
you do a lot of camping and shit.
Yeah. A lot of camping and like, you know, going on like to hit what we would call like hit cuts and like go smoke weed and like chill out and ditch school and do all that. That was like good for that. And
yeah, man. I remember when I used to smoke weed and live in beautiful places, we would go try to find hikes that had streams and then fill up our bongs with like stream water.
Stream water.
You know what I'm saying? It's like icy cold.
Shit, honestly, shit like that in the bay. Yeah. For sure. No, Marin is perfect for that. And then
what'd your folks do? Like, where do you get your hustle from?
My dad is like a financial advisor. Mm. And then my mother is a, a preschool teacher.
Oh, okay. My mom's a teacher too.
There you go, man. Yeah.
But my dad was not a financial advisor. So you ever read Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
I have not read it, but I know what you're talking
about. Yeah, so Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's basically about the premise of like, if you got a fucking poor dad, he's going to teach you how to work for people. But it seems like your dad probably did. He probably taught you how to work for yourself.
Yes, my dad taught me that through, to be perfectly honest with you, through sports.
Yeah? Why? Yeah. What sports were you into?
I was like really, really into sports growing up.
Baseball?
I played baseball, but I was probably the sport that I was into the most was football.
Were you any good?
I was really fucking good.
Really? Yeah. What did you play?
I don't like to talk about it because it sounds like whatchamacallit from, what's that TV show?
Al Bundy.
Al Bundy. It's very Al Bundy-esque if you talk about sports.
Yeah, so Al Bundy.
Yeah, but I played football and I was running back and strong safety.
No shit.
Yeah, but I was really good.
That's
like, I mean, like really good. Like I had like a couple scholarships from colleges.
Really?
But that kind of just went south after I...
Why? Why did it go south?
Because I was really, really passionate about getting into music.
Yeah.
Like, really passionate about it.
But you spent your whole youth, like, just training yourself to be a well-oiled machine?
Yes. Honestly, from 8 was when I first started playing Pop Warner. Mm-hmm. And then I was, like, slaved away.
What did you love about it?
I don't know, dude. It was just, like, you was, like, work ethic. And, like, you, like, stayed busy. So, like, I never, like... I had free time, but it was like, I was always like, I'm going to this, I'm going to practice, I'm going to a sports game, I'm going to, you know, a sporting event. Like it was just like fulfilled. And, you know, and then like during the summer times when I was growing up, I would get sent to football camps like all over the country. Mm-hmm. So I'd go out to like some weird junior college, like these football camps called offense defense. And then, I don't know, dude, it was just like, it was tight. It was like, I really enjoyed sports.
That's so crazy. Cause you're
and
like,
now I hate sports.
Cause you're like so not bro-y. Like I always think of football players that like be a big bros.
Yeah, no. That was a funny thing in high school was because I was in drama class.
Yeah.
And I played football and everyone was like, why are you in drama? Like everyone on the football team was like, why do you take drama, dude? And I was like, because it's fun and cool. And then everyone in the drama class was like, why is this fool in the drama? Like, not that they didn't like me because I got down with the drama kids and the jocks.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, that sense of staying busy and having a tight schedule seems to have carried over into your adult life. As I've been trying to get you on this podcast for like 2 months.
Yes.
And you're always busy and you always have something to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because of my job, yes, it requires me to be like on the move all the time now.
Right. Yeah. And what is your job?
I work for Odd Future or Four Strikes Management, which is ran by Chris and Kelly Clancy. And I basically now what it's turned into is I'm like the touring department.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody Odd Future related, say Odd Future, Tyler, the Creator, Mellow High, Trash Talk, everybody basically except for Frank,
mm-hmm.
if they're going out on tour, well, the internet, they have another guy named Dominic Massey, and but I'm the tour department. So it's like preparing for shows, you know, stage production, merchandise, anything that goes into, you know, logistics, all that stuff.
Are you out there on the road with them as well most of the
exactly,
time?
Exactly, all the time.
No all matter, the time.
Like, I'm the, so, like, the
tour,
guy who's on the
tour
road.
Management too? Or do you have tour managers that work for you? Or
there's
whatever?
Like a, there's a dude named John Bogard who works for Four Strikes Management as well, who helps out with like tour logistics. So John's more of a tour or our tour manager, and I'm... I basically would say the road manager and then documentary.
Okay. What goes into your job? Do you deal a lot with booking agents? Like, are you... I don't know. Like, tell me, explain your job to the kids. Cause I love having the reason that I wanted you on, cause I love having people on that are involved in music, but that aren't necessarily trying to be musicians because I want to inspire kids. You know,
for sure. No, yeah. I mean, hey, listen, I'll tell you this much. Okay. My job is one of those things that is very possible for many people to get involved with. You just kind of have to know how to do it right. You know? And, I'm not like a standard tour manager or road manager because it's like, I'm on stage when you know, say Odd Future's playing and I'm snapping photos the whole time. We'll be walking through an airport and I'm snapping photos, or they're meeting different people and I'm snapping photos. So my job isn't your like kind of like stock or like by the book tour manager / road manager, but that's kind of because my bosses have allowed me to create that. Mm-hmm. So my day-to-day like stuff is like when I'm on the road is like waking up, making sure the guys are up, making sure that they like go to eat and like get their day started, and then we'll go and do a show or have a day off and go on like some ill adventure, because I like when we go to like random cities, I always want to make sure the guys go to places and see stuff. Mm-hmm. And it, like I said, it's not, it's turned into more of like a job that like, honestly, like I love. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm so into it because it's like my bosses have allowed me to kind of create my own lane. Mm-hmm. And they give me a lot of like room to work.
So you get to wear a lot of hats and you probably get to create some of the hats.
Yeah, most definitely. You know what I mean? And it's like everything from like this week is like, I'm not tour managing this week, but it's like this week we got to go to New York because Earl's doing Jimmy Fallon. And it's like, so I'm handling that.
Yeah.
You know, making sure he's got his, on one of the days before we go to do Jimmy Fallon, there's press all day. So there's interviews set starting at 8 a.m. because that's how you got to do early interviews at radio, and they go all day. To like 6-7 p.m. So it's just like in an SUV going from point A to point B, bouncing around.
This is going to air after that airs. So what song is he going to do?
You know, I have no idea.
Because it won't be a spoiler.
They haven't even talked about it yet. To be honest with you, him and Questlove need to talk about that.
Oh, no shit.
They're about to talk about that.
So they just like, once you get to New York, they just like do a practice session with the Roots?
Exactly. At the
That's so tight.
It's super tight. The first time we did it, Mos Def just showed up because he was,
I remember
like,
that. That was like the thing. And he like yelled swag behind you guys a bunch of times.
Yeah, that was a wild one. But like before, it was like the Roots are like playing songs, you know, during the interviews and stuff like that. And then the fact Mos Def was there, he's just like, they randomly did like Umi Says.
Yeah.
And it was just like, dude, this is so tight.
What was the first one? Was it with Tyler and Haji? And then what was the second one?
Just Tyler. And then Tyler did David Letterman recently.
No shit.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that one, but. I was in Marfa, which is my spot.
What's Marfa?
Or I like to call it my spot.
What is that?
That's like the ill art town in Texas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was some exotic island or something.
No, it is kind of exotic in my opinion, but nice. It's in Texas.
So you moved to LA when you're 17. What for? What?
To get into music, for sure. No, I didn't really know like at what capacity.
All right, so then let's slow down. What was it that made you fall in love with music as you're working on football stuff?
Okay, well, my brother started taking me to concerts when I was like mad young.
And the Bay Area had a cracking scene at that point. Hi-Ro and everything.
Well,
and-
okay, let's... Before even that, yes, yeah. fully. But yeah. before even that, I didn't even really get into like... that like underground hip hop until like 15-16. Uh-huh. So before that, my brother was taking me to like crazy, just like weird rock shows or indie rock shows. So that's kind of like what I didn't come up on rap.
Like what? Like, do you remember?
Like Nirvana and Weezer.
You saw Nirvana live?
Yes, I saw Nirvana
wow,
live.
Wow, tight,
yes.
tight.
Weezer, Green Day, you know, like stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was growing up. Yeah. Like my like from like 8 to like 13, 14.
How much older is your brother?
My brother is 33, so he's 7 years older than me.
That's your only sibling?
No, I have two younger sisters.
Okay.
That are 17 and 18.
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out to Kennedy and Brooklyn, but homies, we don't play no games.
Stay away, homies.
Stay away from my homies. Kennedy's moving down to LA in like a week.
They are becoming legal, but you must stay away.
Yeah, they are legal, but stay away. For sure.
Oh, shit.
And, but yeah, so I was like, my brother was like taking me to like ill concerts growing up.
Yeah.
I was like super hyped off of those things. And,
why did your folks, why did they take such a long space between siblings and then they had two daughters right in a row?
I have no idea, dude. My parents are kind of kooky and they're like weird Bay Area.
Yeah.
Hippie people. So they just spread it out. They just same folks.
Spreading out the love.
Yeah.
So your brother's taking you to concerts and stuff when you're a youngster.
Yeah, taking me to concerts all the time. And then say around like 15, 16, I got into underground hip hop.
Mm-hmm. How?
My cousin.
Somebody passed you a tape.
Okay. Yeah, no, my cousin, I was down in LA because my family lives down here as well, like my aunt and my uncle and my cousins and stuff. Mm-hmm. And my cousins went to Hamilton High.
Yeah.
And we were shopping on Melrose at Workman's, and I was like buying some like LRG.
Yeah.
And
Workman's was the spot.
Workman's was the spot. You would go get gear and CDs and like graffiti markers.
Oh, yeah.
And
I used to drive from Santa Barbara just to come buy like t-shirts with graffiti on them and stuff. And
exactly. You'd go get like some Triple Five Soul.
Just look very hip hop.
Yeah. So I was there buying some clothes. I was like, I want to get some CDs as well. And he told me to buy Angels with Dirty Faces.
That was one of my first Legends records too.
Yeah. So I got that. And then that was it. Game over.
That's the one that changed everything for you.
That was the first one I bought.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then like homies were like, I'd go back and I'd like kind of like flex on that in the Bay. And then like all the older homies were like, let me put you onto some tapes. And so I started giving me like Hyro tapes and all that stuff. And then I figured out about Atmosphere. And then I figured out about, it was basically Atmosphere and the Living Legends.
Yeah, for sure.
Hyro, yes. Kind of Hyro more after I started working for the Legends. I was like obsessed with
that. I feel you. Like my gateway drug into the super underground hip hop was Hyro. One of my friends put me onto it when I was like 17 or 18, gave me a Hyro CD. And then from Hyro, I moved to California right after I found out about them. And everybody was like, oh, you like Hyro? You need to find out about these dudes named Living Legends. They're so underground that like my brother would be mad at you if I told you about them.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, then I must
Nobody
hear it.
Nobody knows about them.
Exactly. Which is so funny now because it's like as a musician, I'm like, fuck, I hope I don't have fans that are going like, he's so underground, I'm not going to tell you about him. Like, fucking help out your favorite
please
artist, you
me,
assholes.
Please tell everyone about me as much as you possibly
can. That was the funniest attitude in hindsight.
The attitude has changed.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, absolutely. Because now I feel like Odd Future is technically an underground group that is fucking giant. You know what I'm saying? Like they are an underground aesthetic group that has
couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, that has fully integrated into the mainstream.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Streamlined it completely.
Yeah, yeah. So okay, you get into the Legends,
Legends, got into Atmosphere, and then like once I figured out about how those guys, like and don't get me wrong, I was still always listening to mainstream rap because I love both equally.
Yes,
I do. While I'm, you know, learning about underground hip hop and that culture, which was like not a very accessible culture at that time, too. There was like certain websites that you would look at.
It was an elitist culture, and it felt like you were a part of something.
Exactly.
Like it really felt like you were a part of something.
Exactly. Yeah. And but then at the same time, I'm watching MTV the whole time.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? TRL, you know, whatever, MTV Jams, whatever was on MTV, I was definitely watching it, and VH1. So it was like any sort of other stuff that I had access to, I was going to do it. And you know, at that time, dude, it was like going to find magazines and CDs weren't like, oh, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. It's like, you got to go to this weird Cuddy store in the Bay or in Los Angeles or in wherever you're at.
And then there was like that huge Napster culture too, where it was like, you would hear about these legendary like freestyles that you could only find on Napster and stuff, or like, radio dubs of stuff.
Yes, et cetera. Totally.
And so it was like, in the early 2000s, that was the equivalent of like tape collecting.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Looking for there's like this idea versus Eminem battle. I know it exists.
Yeah, and
you know,
it's somewhere online, and you got to download it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I wasn't really like that hip to. I didn't really know how to do all that shit. But all that shit was just like there. But it was really hard to find.
Yeah.
And so I got into all that, and then.
So here's the difference in the path that you took compared to most people. I think most people are passive listeners, but you heard this stuff and you like somehow said, "All right, well now I'm going to figure out how to get involved with it." So what was that choice about? Like, how did you reach out to get involved initially?
Literally, I had moved down to LA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I was going to SMC.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to SMC for like 6 months. And in the time that I was working at SMC, I had a girlfriend at the time that was going to San Diego State. And she was in LA. And we were on Robertson. And she was shopping on Robertson. And I went into a Reebok store, which was called like the RBK store. Mm-hmm. And I got hired there.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day while I was at SMC, I decided to call the Living Legends booking number on their website.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally like on legendarymusic.com. It said like, for booking info, call 323.
Which was probably Tommy's number.
It was Tommy.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that Tommy's name was
Tommy. Yeah.
So it's like, yo, what's up, man? I'm Tommy.
And you're like, wait, is this PSC's voice?
I just don't know who. Like, I just didn't know who. I just thought it was Tommy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he was like, meet me at the Conga Room on Wilshire tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, word. All right, tight. So then I wore my Living Legends hoodie. went down to the conga room.
Of course, you put on the hoodie. You had to.
I had to put on the Legends hoodie. I was hyped, dude.
I went to a Legends show when I was very young. Well, I was, when I was like 19, and I wore a Hyro shirt. It was like a bright orange Hyro shirt. And I remember Tommy like going, "Yo, man, why you wearing a Hyro shirt at a Legends show? You're supposed to wear a Legends shirt." I said, "Man, I'm not gonna wear your own shirts at your show."
Basically, the same design too.
Yeah, yeah. So, before we go any farther, I just want to say, like, I think that's a great life lesson learned. Is like, if you have a question, just fucking look for it. Like you said, hey, I want to get involved. How can I do it? Let's go to the website and see if there's something I can call. You know what I mean? Because
yeah, it was very simple. It was not like then I just had the balls to do it.
People want
to
get hit up. You know what I'm saying? Like they want help.
And you know what the thing is that like if you, in my opinion, was like I kind of had like an ill line to drop too. I was like, yo, what's up? My name's Brick. I work at Reebok. I can lace you guys with some free gear. And that's like, and nowadays,
everybody wants free gear.
Everybody loves free gear.
Hell yeah.
No matter what they say. Yeah. And so if it's something that's like of interest to someone, you know, like all you got to do is be bold enough to ask.
Exactly. I always say, you know, if you want an answer, ask a question. That's all there is to it.
There you go.
If you want an answer, ask a question.
It's very literal, but very true.
It's the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you meet up with Tommy at the conga room. Lucky I am.
Lucky I am. So I'm
at
like,
the time, PSC.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Name changing forever.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So I'm standing outside. I text him. He comes outside. It's Lucky. I was like, damn, this what? He was like, yo, what's up? I'm Tommy. And I was like, damn, that's Lucky I am.
Yeah. You kind of fanning out a little bit?
Definitely fanning out. Yeah. Definitely fanning out. He's like, come to my car real quick. He hands me a box of flyers. Well, first we like wrapped out for a little bit, just like chatted. He asked me what I was all about. I was like, yo, come to Reebok. I'll lace you. And at the time, mind you, that was kind of like a big deal because Jay-Z had a shoe and 50 Cent had a shoe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The S-Dots.
The S-Dots and the G6s. So that was like, you know, the ice cream program was going on. Mm. Stevie Williams had his DGK shoe that was going on at Reebok. And so that was kind of like an ill time for like rappers with like
sneakers. Reebok was cracking.
Yeah, for sure. No question about it.
That was like before the Dunks really caught on, probably.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was just a time when like they're like rappers were affiliated with sneaker companies. Yeah. Again. So he's like, yo, come to my car real quick. I'm going to give you a box of flyers. If you pass all these out tonight, you have a job. And I didn't really know what that meant, but I was like, pass out a box of flyers? Dude, yeah. Come on. You got to give me something a little bit more difficult to do. So I just banged that out. I hit the whole line, passed out a bunch of flyers for Living Legends Classic album. And 3 days later, the Grouch and Lucky I Am came to the Reebok store, and I was like fanning out, freaking out. I was like, damn, the Grouch is about to be here. Like, this shit's about to be epic. Like, you know, and meet those fools, bring them in, lace them so fat. Like, probably gave them like 10, 12 pairs of shoes each, a bunch of gear, got shoes for their girls, like the whole nine, like laced them. Like, my homie upstairs in the entertainment marketing department really just believed in me.
Yeah.
And then, long story short, was ended up making the Living Legends a sneaker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No shit.
That was like really what kind of like, to be perfectly honest.
Damn, so you had that kind of pull there?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
They were like, the dude that was in the entertainment marketing department was a dude named Colin Brickley. And he found out that my name was Brick.
Yeah, where does your name come from?
A play called Cat in a Hot Tin Roof.
Oh, okay.
By Tennessee Williams.
Do you ever tell your real name? Ever?
That is my real name.
That's your real fucking name?
Yeah, that's on my license. I'm a birth certificate. Shit. Yeah.
I thought that was like a nickname.
No. That's
no
my,
kidding.
Yeah, that's my real name, dude.
That's a tight ass name. Yeah. Your parents really are crazy.
Yeah, they're weird.
I'm stoked. Yeah, I'm going to name my kid Stone.
You should name him something not standard.
I already have an idea.
Not off the wall, but something.
Yeah. I'm going to name my first son after my mom's hometown. It's Easton. Easton.
Okay, yeah. You can run with it. Then there's nicknames.
Yeah, East, which is tight. Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever you want.
Easton Edwards. So any ladies out there trying to get knocked up by your boy, our first son is going to be named Easton Edwards.
It's already decided. There's no change.
Sorry, girl. Yeah, so you end up getting them their own fucking shoe design.
Yeah, it was like a crew shoe. It was like 100 pairs.
A crew shoe? Yeah. Oh, okay. So just for
the homies.
No shit.
Literally just for the homies. 100 pairs.
What did it look like?
It was a Reebok Club C classic, so it was like a very standard basic shoe. And it said had a like the OG Circle Living Legends logo on the tongue. And then it said Living Legends on the side and then Classic on the back. So it was basically like an album shoe, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so at that point, they're just like, damn, Brick is on. He's tight.
Dude, I was 17. Dude, I mean, without me trying to sound like, I mean, for me, I get so energetic about it because I was so hyped at that moment.
Yeah.
I was like working for Reebok. Okay. Like I kind of go to school, but I don't really. So that was tight that I wasn't really in school.
Yeah.
And I'm working with the Living Legends. And I just made them a sneaker.
Yeah, that's
and
tight.
It's like I
as
mean,
a
like,
17-year-old.
As a 17-year-old,
what the fuck
in,
are you doing as a 17-year-old
living
right
in
now,
Los Angeles?
Listeners. Yeah, that's tight. Who were you staying with?
My brother, I lived in an apartment with my brother in North Hollywood, okay, on Lancashire and Hesby.
Did you graduate high school a little early or something?
I graduated from a continuation high school. So it was like not even real high school.
Why? What did you end up in continuation school?
Because I was playing hella sports, ditching school every day. And then they kicked me out of my public high school because I was like truant all the time. I just I would just never go to class. I'd never go to class, get high all day, and then show up to football practice and crush it.
Really?
Yeah.
And what did your coaches think about that?
They were not into it.
They were bummed.
But I was like scoring like 5-6 touchdowns a game.
And did the truancy kind of affect the scholarship offers? Is that what happened?
The truancy and the smoking weed and the doing drugs definitely affected the scholarship offers mentally. Not like...
Like they were still on the table, but you're like, I'm over it. Cause
I was like, way over it. I was like way over like dudes wearing tight shorts and getting their ass slapped by like an old dude and like jock life. And like what went into like when I was going to football camps during the summer, they would be at like colleges and I would see the life, and the life is not tight.
Yeah.
The athlete life is not tight. In my opinion of what I
wanted to do.
Yeah. No, it's not tight.
Why? When did like smoking weed and drugs come into the picture?
Sophomore year of high school.
Sophomore year.
Like really, really.
And was it one of those things like, the first time I was high, I was like, oh, man, this is it. Like, I'm down with weed. Was that how it was for you?
Yeah, down with weed, and then I got experimental. And then what I'm really, really grateful for is I got that shit out of my system.
Yeah.
Early.
Are you clean and sober now or what?
No, I smoke weed.
Smoke weed?
Yeah, occasionally we'll have a drink if it's a special occasion.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when in Rome and at the right time.
Absolutely.
I mean, especially with my job, that's like I can get away with smoking weed because I have a lot of energy, so it calms me down.
Yeah.
Like when I worked for Merce, like, would be like, you have to smoke weed, bro. You got way too much ADD.
Really?
Like, yeah, he would be like, yo, dude,
are you
smoke.
ADD?
I guess that's what...
Did it ever get diagnosed? Did they ever try to put you on
but
pills?
It's like, I just have like excessive energy.
Yeah.
Like, for no reason when I'm working. I'm just like about being a hard worker.
But it's contagious. Your energy is contagious.
Yeah.
Would you say that?
Yeah, it's like a lot of times people say that like I'm like stressful to work with or be around when I'm working, but it's like, I feel like I have to be that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
To be honest with you.
I feel you.
But if no one else is, then who is? Who's going to pick up like the...
But the thing is about your energy, I think that it's probably helped you. I think you're a good salesman. You're great at selling yourself, but you're also great at selling people that you're down for. You know what I'm saying? And I think that that energy is what really helps that. Because like...
I feel that.
Just like 5 seconds ago when you're like, I was fucking 17. It's like you get excited about... I get excited about the story when you're telling it because, you know, your energy is contagious.
Right.
You know
okay, I get that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I try to... pride myself in doing things like that.
You know,
being excited about something that I'm actually passionate about.
Yeah.
Which is music.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a musician, but I'm so into it, and like the culture of it is like so inspiring to me.
And you're always up on shit. That's the other thing too. And I think like, well, now we're talking about like living legends, but you have to put it in perspective. At the time when you were 17 and I was like that was probably when I was like 20 something. They were like the end all be all of the underground rap scene in LA. They were so tight.
Yeah.
Like that was the biggest shit. And it was like, but at the same time, you really had to be up on shit to know about it.
Dude, you know what it was like back then.
Yeah.
Dude. That's how I met you. You were opening up for
Legends. I was opening for the Legends.
You were opening for the Legends in Santa Barbara.
And that was like a fucking huge break for me. That was an opportunity. You know what I'm
saying?
Yeah.
And think about it. Okay. Think about it like that. I met you opening up for the Legends at Santa Barbara in the student center.
Yeah.
And
it was huge.
All I knew about you was that you were an ill photographer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, really?
Your album.
Oh,
your
album, the album cover.
With all the album covers,
oh,
with
yeah,
all the
yeah,
photos
yeah.
on it. Because
yeah,
Alex Spitt had that. And I was dude, oh, all right.
Yeah.
But it's like at that time, it was so not something that you had easy access to.
Yeah, no.
And you really had to do your homework.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, you're still like up on shit because you were, I mean, like, that's how you got in the door with Odd Future, is like being up on them and being like reaching out and saying, look, I just want to fucking help. Right.
Yeah, that was exactly what it was. It was my homie Skeet, which is so crazy that like, to break it down, Skeet was the one that put... I remember we were in San Francisco and Skeet was like, yo, Brick, you got to check out this fool, Tyler. And I was like, all right. And I checked it out and I was like, these fools...
They're on something.
They
when
got
you
some
saw the
shit.
French video, you knew they were on
the
something.
French video, I was just like, damn, these fools are... You know what? Actually, I take that back. It was VCR that I saw. French and VCR. And I was like, damn, this fool, Tyler
I was very impressed by VCR.
He's kooky
well.
And weird and cool.
You knew, and I know that I knew, like, something was going to happen with that.
For sure. No question about
it.
And so at that moment, I was probably a year before that, I just started taking photos.
Yeah.
And I just went for the kill.
Because
I knew that if I made a relationship with them through my photography, it would put like it would definitely help.
Yeah. Well, okay. So wait, we're getting ahead of ourselves because I want to go somewhat linearly. So you're 17, you get a shoe for the Legends, and then like they're like, damn, Brick is the man.
Oh, yeah.
So then what happens?
Then it was like when the shoe was made. I asked Tommy if I could come on tour.
Yeah.
And so I went on a couple dates on the classic tour,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, okay, so I was working for the Legends, but not really like fully working for them. I went on the Classic tour, then fast forward a couple months, I went on tour with Zion I and the Grouch on the Heroes in the City of Dope tour, which was like years ago.
What were you doing while you were on tour for them?
Merch.
Okay.
Straight working merch.
Was it like working on commission or did you?
Yeah, I was working on commission, 10%.
Really? It was like, yo, as much as you sell, you'll get
10%. As much as you sell, you get 10%.
So you had to hustle.
Dude, that's all it was.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
Yeah.
Learning like the ins and outs of like getting over. I remember I went to, this is how I learned how to do this. I went to a Sage Francis show with Lucky I Am. He was like, well, I met him at a Sage Francis show. First off, he was
That was the Conga Room?
No. This was after. I met him at a Sage.
You met up with him.
Yeah. I was okay. Like, this was after the Conga Room. Tommy was like, yo, I need a pair of ice creams.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, I'm gonna bring you a pair down to the Henry Fonda and I'll meet you there. And he was like, yeah, and then you can come to the Sage Francis show. So that was like the trade off was like giving him some ice cream shoes. And then I'm lucky enough to go to a Sage Francis show. So then we go.
Sage was selling out Henry Fonda.
Yeah, then? Dude. How, like,
that's what I'm saying. It was crazy.
It's crazy times. Dude. Yeah. Crazy times. Sure. And so then go there. Meet Sage Francis and him and Tommy are having a conversation about like getting over on venues on merch hustles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like listening the whole time and I'm like, damn, these fools are hella smart. Not having to pay like 30% on like, they're like, what if we only do $500? That's a big cut. Like when you go play the Fillmore and they take like 30% of your merch money, you know, like for an indie rapper, that's a big deal.
Yeah. A lot of fans don't realize that, but when you're selling t-shirts at the venue, they won't take percent on the CDs oftentimes, but on t-shirts, you have to keep track of the amount you've sold because then they take a cut of that, which is crazy to
me. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's a crazy concept.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I learned how to do like merch hustles. I learned how to do the ins and outs of like selling merch. And then Grouch brought me on as like his assistant.
What are some of the things you would do? Like what are like...
Dude, when
break it down. We've got a long time.
When I was assisting for the Grouch, dude, it was like everything, dude, like babysitting. Like,
well, I'm saying with the merch hustles, what were some of the ins and outs of the merch hustles? Like get into detail if you can without like.
Oh, it's like, you know, like instead of like they at venues, you know, they make you do count ins.
Yeah.
So you bring in an X amount.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the whole time you're going out to your van and grabbing more merch and selling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just kind of have fake numbers. You got a fake sheet with fake numbers on it. And you're like, oh, I only sold this much. And you hide a bunch of money. So if they're like, where's all your money?
Yeah.
Then you're like, what are you talking about? Dude, I have $300 right here. This is all I sold.
Right. Right.
You know, that's. To me, like if you're an independent artist and even nowadays, if you learn, I mean, take Verbs, dude. Verbs is really, really good at that.
Yeah.
He learned that hustle. You know what I mean? There's plenty of homies that are our age that are from like underground hip hop school that know that hustle. But it's like you can apply that to nowadays through the internet, through Instagram, through Twitter, through all these things.
Absolutely.
And you like learn how to hustle.
Did you ever hear, I don't want to put any artists on blast, but I've always heard that there's like certain dudes who have huge independent followings that like rather than sell it, like they'll have their merch table, but like the real fans know to look for the dudes that have the backpacks walking through the crowd and they'll sell hand to hand from a backpack in the crowd so that they don't have to pay any of those fees afterwards and shit.
I mean, I'll tell you this much. I know people that do run booths and also have that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Tech Nine.
Yeah, oh yeah, exactly. That's what I was talking
Tech
about.
Nine has two merch sellers that are going through, walking the line.
Right, exactly.
With backpacks full of CDs.
Yeah, so then they don't have to fucking break bread afterwards, which is very smart.
Tech Nine
is a goddamn genius.
That's another place where I learned a lot from.
You work for Tech Nine?
No, I went on tour, though, with him.
Merce and Tech. Yeah.
And that was like the longest tour I've ever been on.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, dude, those dudes are so on point.
Yeah. Oh, they don't run it like it's an independent rap thing, and they run it like it's a goddamn corporation, and it works so well, it seems like.
Yeah, and nobody realizes how strong their following is.
Oh, huge.
Like, you want to talk about people that like make like crazy money and like have like a crazy cult fan base? Tech Nine, Strange Music.
You know, I didn't realize the scope of Tech Nine's power until actually with Verbs at Paid Dues 1 year, I think in 2009, like it was the first year that Tech Nine played it. We were there early because Verbs was going on super early, and so I see Tech Nine walking around. He's just like this little fella, but he's got a very intimidating demeanor. He got a mean face. You know what I'm saying? My brother is like a huge fan of him, and he lives in
Alaska.
Tech Nine. Loves Tech Nine. And so I walk up to him and I just say, hey man, my brother's birthday was yesterday and he lives in Alaska. Would you talk to him on the phone?
Right.
And he's like, huge smile lit up. Oh yeah, man, no problem. And I give him the phone, dude, and he talks to my brother for like 5 minutes, just straight all talking
awesome.
Crazy jive, like, hey, what's up, Steven, man? I'm just out here kicking it like a donkey, you know, like, like him talking at him.
That's tight.
It was so tight. And I got the phone back from my brother, and he was like fucking dumbfounded, dude. He's like, and I'm like, yo, Steve, I'm back on the phone. He's like, oh my God, dude, I was so nervous. I didn't even say anything. And I was like, that, I was cracking
that's
up.
That's why Tech N9ne's tight.
Such a nice dude. He does shit like that. Looks out for his fans, dude. Yes. Like straight
fully,
up.
Yeah, fully. Yeah. So that's where I learned a lot of stuff from, say, merch wise, too.
Yeah.
At that time, I mean, that was late. A couple years later after I started working for the Legends.
Yeah, so you get on the tour with the Legends and you just click with all of them? Like,
yeah, I was just clicking. Well, I clicked mainly with Lucky, Grouch, and then Merce following after that.
Yeah.
Merce didn't like me at first, but...
I don't... Merce doesn't like anybody at first.
No, but then he realized like how hard I work and
that's
how much I was into... How much I idolize him.
I think that's what's always with Merce is like he doesn't like anybody at first, and then when he realizes you're really about it, then he'll like show respect
for
afterwards.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
Which is good. It's good to have... it's good to be protected about your shit. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I've, you know, learned a couple things from him as well, so...
Right. So after your first Legends tour, like you get brought more into the team...
Yeah, okay, so it was more at that time when the Classic album came out, mm-hmm. they kind of were fizzling out as a crew.
Mm-hmm.
So then it turned into like it would be like, all right, Legends tours. Or after the Classic tour, it was like Legends shows here and there. And mm-hmm. then it was like Zion and Grouch, and then it was Grouch and Eli, and mm-hmm. then it was Grouch, and then it was like full-time assistant for Grouch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Grouch taught me a lot. Mm-hmm. Lucky actually taught me a lot too. They all taught me like Merce, Grouch, and Lucky all taught me different things.
Mm-hmm.
To be perfectly honest with mm-hmm. you. Merce taught me how to like hustle super hard. Grouch kind of taught me how to be like a fair, nice guy and like be respectful to everyone and mm-hmm. be open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy taught me how to be like smooth and cool and hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those fools really put me on, like mm-hmm. to be honest with you. I owe a lot to the Living Legends.
Right. I remember when you started touring with Merce, I mean, because Verbs went on the road with you guys too, yes. right? That was right around the time that Verbs and I made the Buzz EP. And I was like, damn, fucking Verbs and Brick are fucking on right now. Because they're touring with Merce. Their shit is on, dog. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like I said, I'm never too good for underground. That shit helped me out a lot.
Yeah, man. For sure.
It guided me. The music taught me a lot. It formed me, and I personally think it formed me into who I am.
Yeah,
whether it was like listening to like weird LP records or weird atmosphere records, or like being on my Cali shit and listening to Hyro and Legends, mm-hmm. and you know, learning about stuff. Like I got sunned so many times for not knowing about Freestyle Fellowship and that type of stuff, but like they sunned me, but like taught me.
Yeah,
so it was like a cool, humbling, weird, intimidating.
Well, I've always felt like we're right on that age group where we're right on the line where maybe Freestyle Fellowship was like just too early for us, meaning like we've heard everybody that they inspired.
Right.
And so it's hard to go back and listen to
and get into it.
Yeah, it's hard to go back and listen to like because you've heard what it became afterwards.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
No, fully.
Yeah,
fully.
Yeah. So, you know, did you instantly fall in love with the road life?
Yes.
Yeah.
Still am.
Why? What do you love about it?
Because I go from like point A or like random spot to random spot, and I like make friends
mm-hmm.
that like some people I've, whether it's like people at the venues, girls, homies in cities, like clothing stores, like brands in other cities, like press people, whatever. I can go around the world now and I have people everywhere.
Yeah.
And to me, like that's like, I don't know, dude, like just growing up and watching the underground hip hop culture and the way that a lot of those guys were moving around, I just wanted to be like, I saw the photos. So like, I wanted to go to that venue that they talked about in that song. I wanted to go to that city where they talked about cute girls being,
yeah.
I wanted to, you know, see these things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, even down to like old photographer, like hip hop photographers that I liked, I would like see these like moments.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just gotta be there. I gotta be there. I gotta do that, you know,
yeah.
without turning into the roadie.
Yeah.
Cause I pride myself in not being like a roadie dude.
I think it's cool that you say like meeting new friends. Cause I think like, you're like the definition of like a connector, dude, as Gladwell would say. Like you,
that's
you are a fucking friend collector, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean like you know everybody, and everybody knows you. Is how I feel. You know what I'm saying? Which mm-hmm. is tight. And like you're very good at making friends with people. Do you know? Do you realize that? Like, was there a point in life where you think, looking back, where maybe you found that out about yourself?
It sounds really cliche
yeah.
to bring up the Gladwell thing, but like my pops would be like, he'd be like, dude, that's what you are. You're a dot connector.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like, I read that book when The Tipping Point came out,
yeah.
and then like. I always was like, kind of like, all right, look, without being okay. In the last couple of years, I've kind of turned myself into a little bit more of a creative, but without being an artist and then being involved with it, there's a way to bring people together.
Yeah. And it's always, I feel like it's always the combination collector, or I mean, a connector and Maven. You know what I'm saying? Like, because you have to be an expert about something.
What is it? I don't know really what Maven.
Maven was like the person that's like an expert and like studies up on things. And like, whether it's somebody who's like good at shopping and goes, oh, you're buying a camera? Well, you should look at this camera instead. Right. Okay. It's like someone that gathers information and then is able to spread it to people.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing, is like being a Maven about music and then also being a connector, it's like you're able to fucking connect the dots between like, oh, hey, you make this type music and you do this. Like, you guys should meet each other. You'd like each other. Like, right. I know both of you, you right. know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was, you know, it was like being a part of that world and like becoming involved with it from a, I don't know, like an outsider, but like business. I've always wanted to be like the business or like behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Like that's always been the appeal to me. Like, for the appeal of you being an artist, mm-hmm. and, you know, like performing and showing people like what you're good at, mm-hmm. is I've always wanted to be like the there's like certain people that like I grew up watching or got inspired by that I was like, I want to be like that. Mm-hmm. I want to be like him, or I want to be like her. You know, that's like someone that's inspiring me. That's not like the face.
Right.
They're the
guy behind the guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, that has always been like a really cool person to me, whether it's a female or a dude or mm-hmm. a, you know, whatever it is, that those people have always been, oh man, I want to be like that.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not afraid to admit it ever.
Right. Right.
There are people I want to be like, not like I want to become them, but there's like characteristics of what they do or what they let people know they're good at that, like, I'm fully down to learn from.
Right. And did you spot that Chris Clancy was one of those people?
Yes. Well, for what he was doing
from the beginning.
I mean, dude, when I met Clancy, I was working at Undefeated.
Yeah.
And he was just coming in there all the time and, just buying sneakers. And yeah. he was just always like a cool, humble dude. And then when literally I'm going to shoot the boys, they were playing a show at the Echo
uh-huh.
when Odd Future did a show there. And, we had really not like, he was like, Brick? Undefeated?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, what's up, man? Long yeah. time no see. And then all these things made sense.
Yeah.
I was like, Eminem, Undefeated. And like all these like weird things, like where it was like I learned about Clancy and what he did, and it's like Clancy's like that dude too. He's like a dot connector. He's yeah. always been in the world of knowing who's next, what's cool, like, you know, what's progressive. And yeah, dude, it was and like right off the jump, I learned that like Clancy like looks up to Rick Rubin, and it's like what not a better person to look
yeah,
up to.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's pulling a Rick Rubin.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah,
that's what Clancy's doing right now
for sure.
Like. Full on.
Did things with like tour managing fizzle out after a certain tour where you had to come back? Because you came back and started working for the Hundreds and stuff.
Yeah, well, what happened was I went on the, it's kind of funny how this happened, but because Merce will say that this is like why I quit, but went on tour with the Legends, did a bunch of stuff with Grouch, you know, was his assistant, and then became Merce's assistant.
Yeah.
Well, in between working for the Grouch, I worked at Undefeated for a while
mm-hmm.
and then got hired, became friends with Merce through working at Undefeated again.
Okay.
Because he would always come in there. And we went on a bunch of tours, like the tour with Verbs and shit for mm-hmm. Merce for President.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went on that tour with Tech N9ne. And then after that tour in Tech N9ne, I was like, yo, dude, I'm going to go on vacation with my pops.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Italy with my dad. And then I came back from Italy and I was like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore, Merce.
Why?
At that time was when I started taking photos.
Yeah. Did Italy inspire you to pick up a camera?
I started shooting while I was out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was like just buying disposables.
Yeah.
And then I bought a camera, like a point and shoot 35. And I just didn't want to work for the Living Legends anymore. I didn't want to like continue to basically, I mean, I know you'll feel me, but it's like continue to stay in the underground world.
Right.
That wasn't really without being rude to the guys. And I know they won't take this person.
There's a ceiling there.
There was a ceiling there and it wasn't being progressive.
Right.
It wasn't like, and I'm not comparing them to that, but like, look at how Rhyme Cyrus has continued to progress.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't being a part of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started shooting and stopped working for Merce and was in desperate need of money.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a promoter in Lake Tahoe named Late Night Billy. And Late Night Billy was working for Girls Gone Wild.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he told Brad, who's Grouch's brother, who also works with me at Four Strikes.
Yeah.
That Girls Gone Wild was looking for tour managers.
No shit.
So I hit the road.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I did like 6 months with Girls Gone Wild.
Really? After the Merce for President tour?
No. After the Tech N9ne tour.
After the Tech N9ne
tour.
So
I worked for Merce for like a good like year and a half.
Yeah.
Almost 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I told Merce, I was like, yo, I'm done, dude. Like
yeah.
nothing personal. I was like, I just got to figure some shit out for myself.
Yeah.
And then.
So what was the Girls Gone Wild tour like?
Insane, dude. And it was like, it was fucked up because it was like they told me, Late Night Billy, who's like a promoter who I think he still works for. Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah.
He was like, dude, they pay you so much, like, you know, a crazy day rate. Yeah. You're in 5-star hotel rooms every day. And he was like, and you're just peeling all day. And I was like, this kind of sounds crazy. Like, yeah. I'm kind of low key into it. And I needed money because I wasn't working.
Right.
I was almost like on like a too cool for school thing. Mm-hmm. And then I went on tour with Girls Gone Wild, dude. And it was like wild. I was like a tour manager for like 4 drunk camera guys. So we'd go into a venue, you'd set up a banner, there'd be a DJ. We'd hold like a wet t-shirt contest, try and wrangle girls onto the bus.
Yeah.
And then the camera guys film scenes. And then I was the guy who was like making sure that girls weren't drunk on the bus, making sure that they're of age, doing their clearances on camera. Like, I'm Susie Q. I'm 18 years old. I'm aware of what I'm doing. I'm about to be on Girls Gone Wild.
And then they would just sit there and diddle themselves.
And well, no, and then there's like the back room, and then and then you're supposed to get a scene.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was wild.
That is so crazy.
Wild, super wild.
And you did that for 6 months?
I did that for 6 months. Like often, like I would go on like a month.
So
run.
What was the craziest city on Girls Gone Wild?
I will tell you, Cleveland, Ohio, dude. There was like, we got like 20 girls. We filmed probably like 15, 20 scenes.
Cleveland, Ohio,
dude. Dude, it was like baddies though, dude. Like ridiculous. I probably really shouldn't be saying this, but like I have like a gnarly Polaroid collection
of like just porno shit.
Yeah, it looks like some 70s porno shit.
That's awesome.
That I will put out one day.
Did you make some good connect? I don't know if you have a lady right now, so I'm not trying to make
I don't have a girlfriend.
Okay, so I'm not trying to put you on blast or anything, but did you make some good connections on that tour where like, cause
female wise?
Yeah, because the good
no
really,
those girls are like girls that shop at the mall.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're just coming there, like they're like not girls that we run into Los Angeles or anywhere else in any major cities. They're girls that are like from the Midwest or like weird podunk towns that come to Girls Gone Wild thinking that they're gonna get famous.
Yeah.
So it's like either they're like there to just get on camera and not to hook up, or they're there just to hook up.
Oh, no shit. Cause
and it's not like what you picture. It's not like big booties and like,
oh no, it's blonde girls.
It's like, whoa, rough. And then sometimes, like I said, Cleveland, Ohio, like jumped off. When I was in Florida for a week for spring break, crazy.
Oh, I believe it.
But not like in like, when you're in like Utah, dude.
Yeah.
Like there's no fine girls.
Oh, I don't know. There's fine girls in Utah.
Okay, maybe not Utah, but
in Salt Lake, but they're chaste. C-H-A-S-T-E, chaste.
Exactly. You know they're not easy to come by.
Yeah. Well, that's funny because like one of my things that I like about touring is like, I feel like you meet girls in other cities that can become like those kind of like long-term in the pockets where it's like, oh, if I'm going to be in town, I'll see you.
Okay. You want to know how that is?
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, yeah. I believe now, it. Well, now, because you're meeting like girls that are more like about that music life.
Well, okay. Yeah, that. And also like I'm old enough now.
Yeah.
Where I'm 27 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I can make it very clear about what it is that I'm doing and why I'm here.
Right.
So like it's not like I'm like, oh yeah, maybe we could like maintain this like text relationship.
Yeah.
It's like I'm 27. If you want to have a good time.
Yeah.
I'm
going
to keep it real with you.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not like on some pimp daddy player shit because it's not like I'm out there. You mind you. Also at the group that I tour with now, the average age of kids at the show is 14 to 17. So I'm not trying to hook up with a girl that's my sister's age.
Right. So like when you see a girl that is your age with potential, it's like, you know, that's something that could,
and now it's like even more because of, like I said, or like you're saying, the people who I tour with.
Yeah.
Now. So it's like a little bit more of an appeal.
Right.
And I know how to deal with, not how to deal with it, but it's like, I've learned how to holler at girls on the road.
Right.
And have a good time.
Yeah.
Like very well.
Absolutely.
Like there's a method to that.
It's just
madness.
By keeping it 100.
Being honest with women on tour.
Being honest with women in general.
In general, yes.
That is something that most guys, they front so much. They don't realize that if you're like, hey, look, girl, I am here and I want to make out with you. Like, let's
do
that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I'm only here for 6 more hours, but like, I want to experience you.
Even
like,
in AM.
They're down.
Yeah.
So after Undefeated,
Gone Wild.
Yeah, then Girls Gone Wild. And so when you get off tour with Girls Gone Wild, like, is life just a fucking jumble?
Dark.
I could imagine.
Dark.
Yeah.
Real dark
times. Well, because, I mean, I would imagine, like, having a schedule like that, but also being involved in wild shit every night when you get home and
but
now
like,
there's...
Like, the appeal of, like, not the appeal, but, like, weird interactions with women will take you into a weird place.
Yeah, did
like,
you get... Did you have, like, some weird misogyny chauvinist
thing?
No,
it was just, like... I mean, sure, maybe, but it was just more just, like, you know, like, oh, like, do I really want to be, like, going out on the road all the time, hooking up with chicks, like... Is this like, you know, am I just like doing that tour guy thing and like not having a girlfriend ever? And, you know, it was just like meeting girls and maintaining weird text relationships or email relationships that are just like there's a point where
they run the course.
Yeah, they run the course. It's like you can only say so many things.
Right. And it eventually gets boring getting the same titty picture over and over.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. You know what I mean? And then like.
And then you meet another one that you're like, wait, this one's better than the last one.
Exactly, dude. And so then you turn into that guy.
Right.
And like, I didn't want to be that guy.
Right.
Or like that, like kind of like. thinking I'm like player, but it's not even really that player. Yeah. So that, then, you just like have a bunch of text relationships that you're dealing with. And it's like, this is so stupid.
Absolutely.
Like, it's better to be real with these people and like actually go and hang out with them instead of like, I've done this so many times, like make plans with a chick and then get to the city and be like, fuck.
Yeah. Oh, you are, you have to babysit tonight your niece. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. Or me bailing on something because I get like weirded out or like, you know, like uncomfortable with it or something. Like
right.
That. But so that happened. I went through like a little weird dark phase. Then me and my homie Skeet, who was like on a break from touring as well, we decided to start throwing like parties at this spot on Beverly. We like rented out a space, tried to throw a bunch of parties.
Yeah.
And that didn't really work out. And in that time, that's when I found out about Odd Future.
Uh-huh.
And
Skeet, he's referring to DJ Skeet Skeet.
Yeah, Trevor.
Who lives in Normal with
no,
you.
No.
He didn't live in Normal?
No, he did. Yeah. That's how Normal started.
At the time. Because we've talked about Normal on here with Bogo and Alex before. Yeah. So that's what
Normal started. The true OGs are me and Skeet. That's what it was.
Yeah.
It was us. We moved there and we're there for a long time.
Yeah.
I still am there.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Nice. So you start throwing an event. What was it called?
Mega. So we started throwing a party on like Trevor threw an epic party years ago with Lil B at Freak City and it was like titled Mega. And so he had this ill sponsorship from like this like weird, I forget what it was, like some company.
Did you guys used to throw that? I think I went a few times.
You did come to it. I'm pretty sure it was on Beverly by like across the street from Medusa.
Like a little ass bar, right?
Yeah, it was a little ass bar and we were just like serving like
those
bullshit.
Were fun.
So we tried to do that. We were trying to actually do, and if people know, there's like the like a club in New York, I forget exactly what it's called, but it was like it felt like a house inside of it, so we tried to like paint it and put couches and make it feel like it was a home inside. And so we did that for probably like 6 months. And in that time I had met Odd Future. And it was literally like I said, Skeet told me about them. We were throwing parties, the parties didn't work. We got rid of the space. No, we didn't even get rid of the space. Skeet had told me, we were up in San Francisco. Skeet had told me about Odd Future or Tyler. I watched Tyler's videos and then I saw Tyler on the block one day and I was like, yo, you guys should just come to my warehouse.
When did you start working out the hundreds?
That was in between. Okay. So Girls Gone Wild started throwing parties with Skeet at that space. And then before I had been working with Odd Future before I got hired by the Hundreds.
Oh, no shit. I didn't know.
Well, taking
that.
Photos.
Yeah.
So it was in like October.
Oh, so you were fucking mega early then. Like you were way earlier. That must have been in what? You met them in 2009 then?
2010. I started shooting them in 2010.
What month?
October.
Remember? No shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
October of two. That's when I first did my first photo shoot with them.
Oh, crazy.
So it was like they played Low End Theory.
Yeah.
When Daddy Kev booked them.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I had met them like a week before that.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was like, Tyler, you can do whatever you want. Just come to my warehouse and just come skate.
Okay.
I was like, I'm not trying to do anything. Just come to my warehouse. And he was like, all right, whatever, dude. Played Low End Theory.
Yeah.
At Low End Theory, Tyler tried to buy a jersey off me. And I said, no, I'm not going to give you. Or I was like, you can't buy this jersey off me. But I knew at the time how much of a it was like, they didn't fuck with anyone. Everyone was like, they were like, fuck everyone. We don't do anything with anyone. And I was like, I'm going to give this little kid my jersey. I'm going to get a photo shoot. And so I gave him my jersey. And that was the
one where you guys like spray painted the shit.
That was when they came, that place where they spray painted was my warehouse.
Yeah, I remember
that.
So
I brought them over there.
I still want to like talk about the Hundreds though, because I feel like, was Bobby like an influence on you at all? Because you were doing the blog.
The Hundreds, I mean, dude, like the Hundreds has always been like all those dudes.
You were
Bobby, Scotty, you like got, Switch.
You were responsible for the Little B collaboration.
Yes, I did do the Little B collaboration.
You were doing shit at the Hundreds.
Well, that's what happened. Okay, so look. I shot Odd Future. Okay. Yeah. That definitely put me on as a photographer, if that makes sense.
Right.
Okay. Because I knew I was literally just blogging before that, like on my Tumblr. I was like just going hard on Polaroids, just going. I mean, dude, I have Polaroids of you from 2010. You know what I mean? Like photos of you in a Gaslamp Killers album release show in a Larry Johnson jersey.
Oh,
like, I got photos, you know, of the homies. So that's what my whole thing was. I was like, I'm going to go out and shoot faces. So people that I like, though.
Yeah.
Because people like the Cobra Snake and Ronnie's photo booth, which are my homies, were not doing the hip hop world.
Right.
No, if you think about it, no one was documenting rap and hip hop.
Absolutely.
Nobody.
Right.
So that was my whole thing, dude. I have ill photos of like Daddy Kev in like LP when LP played at Low End Theory, like Weird Flying Lotus and Theophilus London at Hard Festival, like Gaslamp, like all these things, the people that I was into. So I started shooting all that stuff, knew that Odd Future was going to, you know, that they needed some pull, did that shoot with them, and then got hired by the Hundreds because I didn't have any work.
Okay.
So through the Hundreds, knowing that I like worked with Odd Future, I was kind of like doing my photography thing. I had my little Tumblr blog popping kind of. And then the Hundreds gave me a blog.
Yeah.
And then that's where I would do, like, I was blogging Odd Future on my Tumblr, on BrickSellWell.com, and then I would do, like, my life on the Hundreds.
Right.
So it was, like, anything that, like, I didn't, like, it, I would try and shoot stuff that other people would want to see, not, like, just stuff that I would like.
Right.
But it was just stuff that I would like, so I would go around shooting.
What was the initial inspiration with, like, going analog as far as shooting film on, like, little Happy Snap cameras?
Because I had a conversation with my dad where it was all about supply and demand. What do you give? What is that? Everyone wants stuff that people don't have, okay? And everyone, like, photographers nowadays, they always give me shit, and it's just, like, it's like, dude, I'm just like telling you how it is, whether or not you shot film 3 years ago or 5 years ago. I don't care what you say. But at that moment in time, everyone was just shooting
digital. Right.
They had the SLRs. It was like,
and it all looked the same.
It's like nightlife photography. So yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to shoot film. I'm just going to do that. I started out with the disposable, and then I went and bought a Leica Mini Lux at Sammy's.
Yeah.
I had those on deck at that time.
Right.
And was shooting with that, and then bought a Yashica, and then.
What are you shooting with nowadays?
I have three cameras that I'm shooting with now. It's like a Contax T3, a Contax T2, or four, my Yashica T4. And then I found this like panoramic camera that like I'm obsessed with.
Oh, nice.
That everyone's like, whenever I post it, people are like, oh, what are these film stills?
Yeah, pano cameras are sick.
They're sick. So
yeah. So you shoot out Future, get hired by the Hundreds.
Get hired by the Hundreds, start blogging for the Hundreds. Ashley Nichols, who's like a close homie of mine, who is like been in the rap world for a long time. He worked for Jay-Z. He worked for, did entertainment marketing at Supra, and then was working at the Hundreds. He's like a close homie of mine.
Yeah.
So him and I were working together, and like I fucked with Ben and Bobby super tough. Like, you know, like I like those dudes are cool.
Yeah.
I fuck with those dudes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were like, you can help Ashley out with certain projects, you know?
Uh-huh.
So like Lil B thing, for example.
Right.
I flew up to the Bay. First off, I flew up to the Bay to go to a Mac Miller show because they wanted me to have Mac Miller wear a Hundreds hat that was like a Pittsburgh colorway.
Uh-huh.
So I hit up Anwar because Casey was opening up for Mac at Slim's. Uh-huh. And I went over there, got the photo, found out that Lil B was playing at Hayward's prom.
No shit.
So I went to the concert because Stretch, like Krayshawn's manager,
yeah,
is homies with Mr. Fab, and Mr. Fab is homies with the Grouch, and so I hit up Brad, Grouch's little brother, and just, you know, there you go,
that's a fucking blueprint right there, legit. Yeah,
you just hit up people who know people.
That's exactly what I do with this, because I'm like, oh wait, who do I know that can get this person on? Well, I know they're fucking whatever, like,
and
that's,
it's
exactly
key
what you
to
do.
Hit up the right person.
You absolutely, because you
don't hit up the wrong person.
You can't jump the ladder.
Exactly,
you can't jump the ladder.
I fully agree with you. You got to hit the right person at the right time that's going to hook you up.
Exactly.
And that will fuck with you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And that will paint the right picture for it, too.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I mean? So you managed to get into the Lil B show.
So got in the Lil B show, started talking to his manager, Sebastian, who's a really, really cool dude.
Yeah.
Like, works with, like, Lee Scratch Perry and stuff like that.
Tight.
Like, ill, super rare, weird, kooky dude, but, like, really on point. And met up with him and was like, yo, the Hundreds want to do a collaboration with Lil B. And he was like, you know what? I'm down. Because you guys only do, the Hundreds only do like weird, rare collaborations, which some would say is true and some would say is not. But
right. Yeah,
and Lil B flew down to LA. We made him a capsule collection for Coachella.
Uh-huh.
We rented him a house at Coachella. I stayed with Lil B in Palm Springs for a weekend, which was one of the most craziest experiences ever.
That's tight.
Because he's just a weird, weird dude.
Yeah.
Legit. He is. He's very calm and quiet and keeps to himself.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was just doing projects. I was like hustling to get down with the Hundreds, knowing that like that's a good relationship to build.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like I had been working with them in the past with Alexander Spitt, you know, like was always trying to like work with the Hundreds in some sort of capacity because I had relationships with them.
Right, right.
And so then worked for them for a while and then.
But then the Odd Future thing really starts to take off.
No, the Odd Future thing really jumped in for me personally.
Like really took off.
Like really took off.
And so how does it go from I'm this dude that's photographing them occasionally to like I'm a part of the team? What is the process?
This is exactly how it went down. They went on an East Coast tour.
Mm-hmm.
I flew myself out, paid for my own hotel rooms,
mm-hmm.
and just documented it. And mm-hmm. then just kept documenting it. And then Kelly hit me up one day.
Yeah.
And Kelly said, hey, yo, do you want to shoot the crew for BAPE? And I was like, hell yeah, I do. Like,
right.
I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This is so tight. She was like, we got a budget, the whole nine. And that was another one of those moments where I was like, yo, Brick, you got to step up to the plate and make this happen. This is like a legit photo shoot, like mm-hmm. magazine, you know, legit, like cover, like you can't fuck up. So mm-hmm. I like got all the necessary tools, rented a studio, the whole nine.
What and did you shoot it with? Film?
Mamiya medium format, like 6.47.
Oh, tight.
Yeah, it was like
strobes and everything?
Yeah, I had it all set up. My homie Doug Chung, who's like ill, like artsy photographer dude that like
Doug. No shit.
Yeah, look, Doug is the man. First off,
yeah,
Doug,
no, I know.
Doug is the truth.
I love Doug.
Yeah, he's the homie. He like knows what's up. Like, yeah. Doug went on tour with me in Verbs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He was Merce's videographer.
No shit.
So I've been knowing Doug. Doug's the homie. And so Doug helped me out with that shoot. He like literally like probably like legit technically like made that shoot happen.
Yeah.
But like, you know, sometimes that's just how it goes. Yeah, absolutely. People work together.
I mean, on major shoots, photographers rarely light the shit for themselves anyways.
Exactly. Like, so Doug just threw me the alley. You know what I mean? Helped me out. And he got to work on a cool project.
Yeah,
and,
tight.
But while we were doing the shoot, Kelly and Chris were like, yeah, like we're doing Hard Festival tomorrow. And like, we don't have anyone like running point.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, let me run point.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'll do everything. I'll drive. I'll pick you guys up. You know, I'll make sure that they get on stage on time. I'll do everything. I was like, let me TM for the day. And they were like, all right, trial period.
Nice.
And so I killed it.
See, I love that. Like, I had heard that story before that you like flew yourself out to document. And I love that. Like, you were inspired enough to put some skin in the game on your own fucking dime. And I think most people aren't willing to do that nowadays. Do you know what I'm saying?
You have to do that.
You have to do that. You have to fucking put in the work. You know what I'm saying? And once people see that you're putting in the work, good things will happen.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. And that's exactly how it worked out.
Yeah.
For me.
And so, you're the point man for the Hard Fest and you TM for the day and it goes swimmingly.
Yeah. It went great.
And so then what?
From that moment, I remember I had like a ill meeting with like Chris and Kelly and Palmer, the guy who runs their merchandise.
Right.
And I kind of got hired by all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
what was the initial, like, was there a title for your position at first?
No, not really. I was just working for Four Strikes Management.
It's
just
like something you had to grow in and see like
kind of what I was supposed to be doing. Right. I let them know right off the bat. And I think they took that and gave it to me. And Chris and Kelly Clancy are some of the coolest people I've ever worked for in my life, to be honest with you. Like I couldn't ask for better bosses. Mm-hmm. They give me so much room to do what I want to do, give me opportunities, and also like help guide you through those things. You know what I mean? And they don't do it in like a baby. Like they don't pamper you. They like, it's kind of like, yo, this is how it goes. This is how it's going to be. And it's not like a militant thing, but it's really good, you know, through their experience, through working through major labels and shit, they've kind of formed their own little world.
Right.
So it was like a weird thing of working for them. But I told them right off the bat, I was like, you know, I want to leave the hundreds and do something progressive. I don't want to just turn into a yes man.
Yeah.
So I think when I said that initially, they kind of took that seriously and like, not like I was like, I don't want to be a yes man, but I was like, I want to do more, you know? And so, like I said, in the beginning of the interview, they kind of let me turn myself into something that I want to be,
right,
that I'm passionate about, you know, which is like documenting the tour, going on the road, and like being a part of a movement.
Yeah.
And so that was very, very, you know, cool and like interesting and all, you know, exciting all at the same time, really. Like super exciting.
Are you living the dream?
Like low key, yeah. In my opinion.
Yeah.
It won't be for that much. Like if you like, and it's not the dream in the sense of like money everywhere and like gold and all that stuff, but it's like the dream of like what you're passionate about. And
people only chase money because they think it'll make them happy, but the point is that if you are happy, like, you know, the money,
like
the money is secondary.
Dude, intuition, bro, you know.
You can call me Lee.
I like calling you intuition though. I have you in my phone as intuition.
Really? That's funny. Yeah.
Okay. It's like, you know what the dream of is of like being like a touring guy
on
the road. And it's like, it's not like I'm living the dream, but it's like, I've had moments that are like so bucket list in hip hop.
Yeah.
That it's like, dude, I can't ask for that much more. Yeah. I turned myself into an ill photographer.
Yeah.
Like being someone that I want, there's photographers that have documented like movements in the past that like I know I already am very similar to them.
Right.
For like a certain time period.
Right. Well, like when you look at somebody like Jonathan Mannion's career and like how he was there during the golden era kind of, and like documenting, like if you guys don't know who Jonathan Mannion is, look him up. His work is fucking
super
crazy,
OG.
But it's like this very poignant moment in time from the fucking mid 90s when he was like everywhere documenting every huge rapper, and it was a very stylistic thing. Like you could spot Jonathan Mannion work, and I feel like looking at your work now, you can spot Brixtol work, and you know that it's a Brixtol photo, and also you are there for something that people are going to look back on in 15 years and be like, oh, that was a fucking thing. You know what I mean?
That's where I'm at with
it.
That's really is the whole thing. Is like I'm following or documenting a movement or a time period that will be covered so detailed and so like for such a long period of time that's there's just certain photographers that I look up to, whether or not they're successful it to other people or not. You know what I mean? Ricky Powell with the Beastie Boys and Run DMC, mm-hmm. Craig Friedman with like, you know, LA punk bands and like Ice-T and like Body Count and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Dan Monick with Atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Dan Monick's ill.
Like that book, that book seven is like, I look at that book every day.
Yeah. My homegirl was assisting for Dan Monick for a while.
It's yeah. Just, like I awesome got to dude. The Instant Messengers, Alex's old group. We got to do a photo shoot with Dan Monick back in the day. And that was like, those guys to me are like so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Like those dudes are the ones that like were like, all right, my homies are doing something.
Right.
Might as well document it.
Right, right.
Like whether or not people like those photographers or not, but like for me as like something to base things off of, it was like very easy because it's like, oh, it's like analog film, rap, hip hop. Now I work with a punk band that's pretty relevant.
Making sure that a scene that was fucking influencing was being sure to be remembered in history.
Exactly, dude. Like, I'm not worried about the photo show right now.
Right.
I'm not worried about making a photo tee. And like 25 years when I'm like the old guy.
Yeah.
Then I can flex on everyone.
Yeah. What do you want to be doing in 25 years when you're the old guy?
Chilling, like how like other people I know, like not like have a stressful life mm-hmm. and still be involved somewhat in some capacity of music, whether mm-hmm. it's like owning a music venue or, you know,
yeah.
being like a promoter guy at like a festival or be involved in music somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know what capacity.
And that's my question. Cause I know you and I are similar in that we're probably never satisfied. You know what I mean? It's yes. always like,
it's like, what's the next thing?
It's like, okay, cool. We're fucking accomplishing this. Now what can I do next?
It's,
not that, you are thinking of moving next anywhere anytime soon, but like what would be the ultimate dream for you? You know what I'm saying? Like
right now, what the ultimate dream is, to be honest with you, is to take this job that I have right now and somehow parlay it into me being more of like a bigger creative.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to become not necessarily like
maybe an ad agency or something.
Something, dude. I don't know, like a consulting for like brands or artists or something that, you know, like guiding people to help them know, like not, I don't know. What's cool about the photography thing right now is I could do that when I'm older.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to be like a photographer.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a thing that you do. It's not like what you...
It's something I'm passionate about.
Yeah, yeah.
And
as soon as you start fucking making money off of it, like real money off of it, that's...
Or like relying on it.
Yeah, as soon as you're relying on it, that's when it's not... You're not passionate about it anymore.
I can only imagine.
Absolutely.
So it's more parlaying this gig right now.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I'm going to ride this one out as long as I can.
Yeah, you know? As you should.
It's seriously, as long as I can, and that will parlay and do something else. Just like... gigs in the past, how they have. I didn't think I was going to be working for some group called Odd Future when I was working for the Living Legends.
Right.
I didn't even know who they were.
Right.
I didn't think I was going to be taking photos, but that's like the best part about like living in Hollywood and living in LA is like, if you're not like, I'm going to be this, then you can like guide yourself in this weird kind of like crazy life that everyone lives in LA and Hollywood.
Yeah.
And kind of like you choose your own destiny, dude. Like,
absolutely.
LA is the land of fucking opportunity. There's I hate when people come to LA and they're like, there's nothing going on here. I can't figure it out for myself. Like, quit relying on everyone,
crazy.
Dude. Like, quit not, like, the LA is where you hustle. And like bust your ass and like make a name for yourself. It's so easy to do it. Not like so easy, but it's so easy to go like.
It's not easy, but it is doable because your path has not been easy. And you shouldn't sell yourself short by saying that, because the theme of this podcast is if you fucking work hard, good things will happen.
That's the better way to put it.
It's not easy in LA, but if you come here and you fucking work hard.
Shit happens.
And the harder you work, the luckier you get. That's
exactly
really what it is.
You know what you just said makes the most sense. The harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yeah.
Not the harder you work, the easier shit comes along.
Yeah.
I guess I shouldn't say it's so easy to make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
It's what you got to do is how hard you work
mm-hmm.
is how you will make a name for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So bitter, salty people that both of you and I both know that mm-hmm. we deal with on a daily basis. The reason why they're that way in Los Angeles is because they're envious and jealous of other people.
And when you protrude negativity, people don't want to be around you.
Exactly.
And I learned that the hard way, because I really have... Like in the last few years, I've tried to like come around and make myself a nicer person, because I feel like I was portraying negativity. And as soon as I did like turn that shit around, better things have started happening. That's all there is to it. You know what I mean? So anyhow, I think that's a good place to end. We've done a little more over than an hour, and I thought that was awesome. It's a great story. It's great to hear where it all came from. And I hope that kids listening were inspired by it, because the proof is in the pudding. Like, if you do work hard, good things will happen, and good things
exactly
are happening for
is.
You. So without further ado, tell the people where they can find you online. I know you're kind of tough to find online right now. You kind of erased your identity from the internet for a while.
I like to keep it kind of low key.
Yeah.
I have like my Instagram, which is just my name, Brick Stowell.
Which you're like killing the Instagram game, like fucking 20,000 followers or something now. Killing it.
I don't know. Yeah, dude, that's because of the OF, the golf wingers, dude. Those little kids love that shit.
That
dude.
Shit's tight. I mean, the photos on there are fucking tight, too.
I just like to, I like to show, here's what it is at the end of the day. I like to show people what I'm into.
And I like to follow it. It's awesome. Like, I think it's great, all the places that you're going and have been, and like watching what you guys are doing as a unit through your eyes is very interesting. So follow them on Instagram.
And then my Tumblr.
Brickstowell is BrickStowell.
Correct.
Brickstowell with two L's. And then your Tumblr is Brickstowell.com.
Yeah, just Brickstowell.com.
Yeah, man. Brick, I appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it.
Most definitely.
It's good. We've known each other for a long time.
Yeah,
so
I'm glad
cool
that we were
shit.
Finally able to organize this because you're a man about the world. Not, I was going to say a man about town, but you're a man about the world. You're never here. So my name is Lee. You guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making it sound buttery.
Yeah.
At I Am Database, base with two S's. Follow us as a unit. At That's Kinda Neat, and youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat. And then, of course, you can find everything on kindaneat.net. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. I saw some like YouTube comment the other day where a kid was like, oh, I've been waiting for a new interview for 2 weeks because you guys didn't put out a video. But the point is, if you subscribe on iTunes, you would know that every Wednesday we put out a new episode. So thank you guys for tuning in. This is my man Brick.
Yep.
And this was Kinda Neat.
Awesome.